to the chapter 14, which is the three modes of material nature chapter. How long does this class go until, by the way?
1 hour.
Okay. So then we go through this chapter 14, which is helpfully entitled The Three Modes of Material Nature. And the other thing I want to go through is 11th canto, chapter 25, is it? Yes. We'll have some 11 cantos here and some, that's called The Three Modes and Beyond, which is interesting. And there's a few other places in the Bhagavad Gita, 17th chapter, 18th chapter, where various things in the three modes are discussed, and also in the third canto, devotional service in the three modes are discussed. And I have compiled for you, which you won't get yet because of technical problems, but which will be Xeroxed, this helpful comprehensive chart, 5 pages long, from which you will always be able to give a class in the three modes just by having. Because here's, it's got, you know, goodness, passion, and ignorance, and then the general nature. And then from the 14th chapter, from Srimad Bhagavatam 11.25, from Bhagavad Gita 17 and 18, and from the Srimad Bhagavatam 3rd canto, chapter 29, all various things in the three modes, right, in one chart. And what I want you to do is, when you get this chart, is sit down and go through it and just keep doing it. And then you get a really good idea what we're talking about after a while, what the three modes are really about. It will be hard for people in the mode of passion and ignorance to understand this course. But you should try anyway. Because knowledge only knowledge develops in the mode of goodness. Prabhupada, here I have from Prabhupada's purports, three types. He says some are happy, some are active, and some are helpless. The happy, the active, and the helpless. We're supposed to be the happies. So anyway, we should have this for you tomorrow. Now let me get my crib sheet and my notes out here, what I want to discuss today. Okay. Now, this topic of the three modes was always a very mysterious one. I had several courses on the Hinduism, really, in college and graduate school, and we always read the Bhagavad Gita, and there's always this mysterious stuff about the strands. They translated guna as strand. Strand, yeah, S-T-R-A-N-D, the three strands, or the three ropes, or the three, you know. And the whole thing was totally unintelligible, and neither Dr. Dasgupta or Dr. Chatterjee or even Swami Nikalananda didn't go very far to making it clear to anybody what this was about. You know, it was actually only till I read the Bhagavad Gita by Srila Prabhupada I can understand what we were talking about. These three modes of material nature. But it's very, very fundamental. And when it's discussed in this 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we find something very interesting that Prabhupada tells us. If one understands this chapter through the process of philosophic speculation, he will come to an understanding of devotional service. Then he develops that thought a little further and says, thus it is expected that one who understands this 14th chapter will attain perfection. So basically, by the process of philosophical understanding, philosophical speculation, he says, he uses the word speculation. philosophical speculation. Now, there's a difference between philosophical speculation and mental speculation. Philosophical speculation is the use of logic and reason that comes to the conclusion of Krishna consciousness. That's called philosophical speculation. When it comes to many conclusions all over the maps, different ones for different days, that's mental speculation. So just by reason and logic applied to this chapter, you come to an understanding of devotional service and becoming free from the modes of material nature. Because, Krishna says, by becoming fixed in this knowledge, one can attain to the transcendental nature like my own. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution. Now, to basically understand the three modes of material nature are easy to understand in a very basic way, because when you have the material creation, there are three phases: creation, maintenance, and destruction. Things are being created, they last some time, and they're destroyed. As soon as the time factor is manifest, then there's creation, maintenance, and destruction. So when things are being created, material nature is said to be in the mode of passion. So mode means a way of acting. So material nature acts in this way to create. That is the rajagun, the mode of passion. When things are being maintained, that is mode of goodness, sattva. It's the word sat, S-A-T, with the ending T-W-A put on it. So sattva, the condition of being sat. Sat means real, pure, even eternal. So sattva, goodness, purity. That's when things are being maintained. And then when things are being destroyed, tamagun, the mode of ignorance or darkness. So that's very simply what it is, and that's the way you can explain it. I don't know why none of these people ever said this to me in any of my Hinduism courses. Either they understood it, or I don't know why they never told us. And I would ask too, and they'd say, Anyway, that's basically three things are there. So you can understand that the spiritual situation, which you want to isolate from this, is called sattva, but shuddha sattva. In the spiritual situation, things are being maintained, things exist, but there is no coming into being, nor is there any going out of being. So there's no passion, and there's no ignorance. So that's why the spiritual situation is called shuddha sattva or vishuddha sattva, pure goodness or purified goodness. And that's why for the guna avatars that Lord Vishnu himself is in charge of sattva in the material world, because that's his in the spiritual world, that's his own nature. So he's in charge of that when it appears in the material world, but it's bracketed on either side by, in the material world, wherever there's sattva, it's bracketed. They show up together by passion and ignorance. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva are at work. Okay, so that's basically where it comes from. And what we discover, the important thing to discover is, while we can see in the external world, you see springtime in the mode of passion, and you see, you know, fall in the mode of ignorance. You see things, nature itself is going through these cycles. But also it affects human beings and produces psychological types that people, embodied souls, are under the influence or control of these modes. And these modes are what condition or bind a soul. Now there's a verse I want you to know about. This is Canto 3, Chapter 26, Text 14. And there's two words that are used to describe the energy of the Lord. Sa'esha prakritim shukshmam daivim gunamayim vibhu. That this material energy, well, as is, well, let me read the whole thing. Yarichchaya Iva Upagatam Abhyapadyata Lilaya. As his pastime, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the greatest of the great, Vibhu, accepted the subtle material energy, Prakritim Shukshmam, which is invested with the three material modes of nature and which is related with Vishnu. So these two words are there, huh? Daivim. Daivim means related to Vishnu. And invested with the three modes. Gunamayim. Of course, you know the 714. Daivi, Hiesha, Gunamayi. Same two words are there. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that this describes two aspects, these two words describe two aspects of this potency of Vishnu. He says, in this verse, the word gunamayim is very significant. Daivim means the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Daivim means related to the Lord, related to, derived from Vishnu. So daivim means the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and gunamayim means invested with the three modes of material nature. When the material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, this gunamayim energy acts as a manifestation of the energies of the three modes. It acts as a covering. The energy emanated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests in two ways: as an emanation from the Supreme Lord and as a covering of the Lord's face. That means that if it's when it acts as a covering, you cannot see the Lord or see that the energy is in fact an emanation from him. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that because the whole world is illusion by the three modes of material nature, the common conditioned soul, being covered by such energy, cannot see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what it does. It covers him. Covers them. The example of a cloud is very nicely given. All of a sudden there may appear a big cloud in the sky. This cloud is perceived in two ways. To the sun, the cloud is a creation of its energy. You know, the sun makes the water evaporate and makes the cloud. But to the ordinary common man, in the conditioned state, it is a covering to the eyes. Because of the cloud, the sun cannot be seen. It is not that the sun is actually covered by the cloud, only the vision of the ordinary being is covered. Similarly, although Maya cannot cover the Supreme Lord, who is beyond Maya, the material energy covers the ordinary living beings. Those conditioned souls who are covered are the individual living entities, and he from whose energy Maya is created is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the situation. This energy of Krishna, it is related with him, it is his energy, therefore it is divine. It's divine. It also translates this as divine. But this is the aspect that blocks the view. Gunamayim, invested with the three modes. So both of these, Daivihi Esha, Gunamayi. So those who are under this, that's what makes one conditioned soul. When one sees Daivam entirely and completely, then there's not a conditioned soul. Okay. Now I want to talk a little bit about just how the world comes about before we get into the psychological manifestations of the three modes and everything. Before I can do that, I wanted you to have this material here anyway, which we don't have today. But the three modes are manifested as early part of the process of creation. They're high up on the list of things that happen. First of all, the energy of the Lord appears as pradhana. You know that word, pradhana? P-R-A-D-H-A-N-A with a long A, pradhana, which means the chief. And this pradhana is the sum total of the material energy, but there's been no distinction of cause and effect yet. It's completely undifferentiated. Everything is merged together. It hasn't been energized at all. When it becomes energized by Krishna, by his potency, which appears as the time factor, then the pradhana is called the Mahat Tattva, M-A-H-A-T-T-T-T-A-T-T-V-A, Mahat Tattva, which Prabhupada translates as the sum total of cosmic intelligence, this Mahat Tattva. At that point, and it's agitated by the time factor and by the destiny of the conditioned souls who have been injected into the material nature. And then, at that time, first, there's a manifestation of this Vasudeva state of pure consciousness, and then the false ego appears, Ahankara appears, and that false ego then appears in three states, goodness, passion, and ignorance. This is Kapila's account, right? So that false ego appears in these three states, and then out of that, everything else is evolved. So it's the three modes are right there, right from the very beginning. You get the Mahatattva, then you get false ego in goodness produces the mind. So the mind is a product of false ego in goodness. Notice the whole basis of everything is false ego. That is to say, ignorance. False consciousness of who I am. So there's the mind, which is false ego in goodness. And then false ego in passion. From the false ego in passion evolve the senses. That is to say, the knowledge receiving senses and the acting senses, right? The sense of sight, sense of hearing, sense of touching, tasting, smelling. And then the senses by which we act on the world, you know, the organs of sound production, the organs of manipulation, the organs of motion, reproduction, and evacuation. Right? Those things, all those senses, those 10 senses, active and knowledge receiving senses, all come out of the mode of passion. And also intelligence and prana. Because intelligence makes the knowledge acquiring senses function, and prana, what is prana? Vital air, life air, makes the active senses, active organs, work. So that's what comes out of the mode of passion. Then false ego and ignorance produces the sense objects. There's 5 sense objects. Form, sound, odors, tastes, and I don't know what you call it. Hardness, softness, heaviness, light, the tactility, you know. Those are the sense objects. So the 5 sense objects and the 5 Mahabhutas, earth, air, fire, water, and ether. And that's the inventory of creation. Those are the categories of the Sankhya philosophy. You add them all up, you'll get 24 if you count chittam, consciousness. And 25 is time, which is the mixing element. So these things, the elements of creation, the false ego, and then in goodness, passion, and ignorance, and everything comes out. So there you have the whole creation is made in this way out of the 3 modes of material nature. Any questions about that? Yeah? Yeah, the sum total of material intelligence, that's what he calls it. He says material. Sum total of material intelligence. So sum total can mean cosmic. Well, the Mahatattva. It's called Hiranmaya. It's called Hiranmaya. It means made of gold, right? Golden. Like a golden egg. Mahatattva. But this, the sum total of cosmic intelligence, is different from the element of creation called buddhi, which is comes out of false ego and passion. It's a different thing. It's not the same thing. Yeah.
You mentioned the difference. When Pratana is energized by Krishna, he said that energizing comes in the form of contact. But often we hear it's a glancing.
Yeah.
That glance.
Yeah, that glancing is called sudarshan.
But that's a time factor.
Yeah, it's also a time factor. Yeah, that's described here as the time factor. And it's And it says here, is felt as the time factor. The influence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is felt as the time factor, which causes fear of death due to the false ego of the deluded soul who has contacted material nature. And it says, and Prabhupada says, so that the verse is, by exhibiting his potencies, the Supreme Personality of Godhead adjusts all these different elements, keeping himself within as the Supersoul and without as time. So, time I am. That's Krishna's nature. Yeah.
So, the question is, where are all the lieutenants involved that are destined to the world? Where are they all in the same place? You said to die at some pole of all material, under creation, all together. Are they part of that Prada? Are they in the Prada? Or sometimes we hear at the end of creation of the humanity that becomes absorbed into the Lord.
Yeah. Where are they? They come out. They come out. When the Lord glances, see what the energizing factor is, time, and the living entities with their karma. It says daivat, when the thing is being agitated by the karma of all the conditioned souls. Into, yeah. This is what's being described here is the Big Bang, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand it. Could an analogy be like, say, you have like a petri dish and you're like injecting like bacteria in there and all of a sudden?
Well, yeah. Or, you know, you got an empty field and you bring workers and they start building a house, you know, something to make it go. This is described in this chapter, in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 14th chapter, you'll see it. When Krishna starts discussing the material nature, which I just read in a little bit detail from Bhagavatam, he starts off by saying the total material substance, which is called Brahman, so it's also known as Brahman, is the source of birth. And is that Brahman that I impregnate, making possible the birth of all living beings. So the word for source of birth yoni. It means like a womb. It's like a womb. It's described in the Brahma Samhita. The way it's described in the Brahma Samhita is that in the spiritual world, there's Krishna's loving glance at Radharani, which a shadow of which gets enacted down on a lower plane as Lord Mahavishnu glancing over material nature, and then in the form of pencils of rays of light, as it's described, like pencils of rays of light from a distance, you know, material nature gets activated, and then that glance takes on the form of Shambhu, Lord Shiva, who actually consorts directly with material nature.
That glance is transformed into Shambhu.
No, it is Shambhu, you know. Huh? He's the penumbra, you know, whatever these things mean, you know. You know, you're dealing with a situation that's a little tricky to understand. Because, you know, you're talking about the material energy before it's differentiated into anything. You can't understand it. When material scientists try to understand the Big Bang, they run into the same problem. You know, because everything is merged, everything's white hot amalgam, and so your experience is not much of a guide as to what's going on.
Yeah,
Yeah, well, you know, what you do is you memorize verses and just meditate on them. That's how you grasp it with your mind. Because by just trying to, you know, put it all together like a jigsaw puzzle, it doesn't exactly work out. But people have looked at this process from various angles of vision. And from various angles of vision, it looks different ways. From one angle of vision, you just see the internal potency of Krishna and Radha. From another angle of vision, you see Vishnu glancing at material nature from a distance. From another angle of vision, you see Lord Shiva and Bhava and Bhavani united in a sexual embrace. That's also the way it's described.
Side B.
He consorts with his external potency. When the absolute truth is seen in connection with the external potency, then it's Shiva. It's not Krishna. Krishna keeps the distance. And actually, there's something said very interesting here about that. When we're looking at the super soul, he's called Vasudeva. He appears in the Mahatattva first. In order to be situated in clear consciousness or Krishna consciousness, one must worship Vasudeva. Vasudeva is Krishna alone. When Krishna or Vishnu is alone, that is when he says alone, is Krishna alone, he means Krishna by himself. Without the accompaniment of his internal potency, he is Vasudeva. When he is accompanied by his internal potency, he is called Dwarkadish. So that's the difference. So when we are thinking of Krishna as the super soul, which is the person who's in charge of the material world, actually he's Krishna alone. He's Vasudeva. He's not really consorting with the material energy, but he is somehow or other dealing with it. The consort of the material energy is Lord Shiva, who is the halo of the glance, you know, of whatever that means, of Lord Vishnu. Anyway, this is all esoteric stuff. Yeah? Well, he's described as you sit down and read the Brahma Samhita a couple of times, but he's described as exactly as the halo of the glance. Isn't that right, Gopi? It's like the halo.
That's a penumbra.
Penumbra, yeah. Halo is a penumbra. Yeah, the living entities are there with their karma and the time factors in that glance. Body actually contains all living entities. You know, he's called the Lord of the living, you know, he's called Mahesh, he's the Lord of this world, you know. Because why is he the Lord of this world? Because basically the whole world, the fundamental principle of material existence is ignorance. And he's the Lord of the mode of ignorance. That's why he's got this he's called Mahesh. He's the Lord of everybody who's in the mode, who's ignorant of Krishna. Now, you know, whether you want to say all the living entities are in him. Anyway, he's along with them. They come into the material world. And once there's matter, you know, there's Shiva. Lord Shiva's there. And matter is essentially ignorant. It all comes out of false ego.
So it says that Lord Shiva is coming into the Pradhan with living entities from the glass of Lord Vishnu. So what is it about pastime where Lord Shiva like pops out of the forehead of the Lord Rama?
That's Rudra. No, well, there are 11 Rudras, so that they're manifestations of Lord Shiva. There's another way he comes out in different ways, you know. Yeah, that's another way that he's manifest a little later on. But he's already been there. He's already been there. Just waiting to come out. But because of his close association with material nature, you cannot achieve the same spiritual restoration worshipping Lord Shiva as you can worshipping Lord Vishnu. Yeah.
So Lord Shiva
has what I just told you, the sentence I just told you is a quotation from Srila Prabhupada. That you cannot achieve the same spiritual restoration as what his use rest by worshipping Lord Shiva as you can with worshipping Lord Vishnu. Now, you can get out of the material world by worshipping Lord Shiva. You worship him as a Vaishnava in connection with Lord Vishnu as the head of a Sampradaya, as, you know, because it says, you know, as the Ganges is the greatest among rivers, as what else? Shiva is among the Vaishnavas, as something is among the something, so this Bhagavatam is among the Puranas. That's the verse. So he's, you know, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, as he is the greatest of all the Vaishnavas. So you worship him that way in connection with Krishna, but you see, you worship him as separate from or independent or equal to Krishna, then you won't get it. So the answer yes is there, provided, you know, that you see him in the right way. Yeah.
In the steps of Krishna after Mahatattva, is the vastative stage of pure consciousness, that's when super soul enters.
Well, the Supersoul is already there, but he becomes manifest. Actually, what happens is the Chaturvyuha becomes manifest. Vasudev, Shankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. Because Vasudev is the Lord of pure consciousness. Shankarshan is the Lord of intelligence. Is that right? No, mind. Prajumna is the Aniruddha is the Lord of intelligence, and Prajumna is. Let me look. You should know this. This is a big topic in the Vedanta Sutra there. Oh yeah. Okay. Here we go. Excuse me. Vasudeva, the Lord of consciousness. That's right. Shankarshan of ego. Yeah, there we go. Aniruddha of the mind and Prajumna of intelligence. And if you want pure consciousness, worship Vasudev. If you want to become free from false ego, you worship Shankarshan. If you want to become free from mental disease, you worship Aniruddha. If you want to develop strong intelligence, you worship Prajumna. This is the Chaturvyuha, and they rule over these things.
They actually make appearance.
Yeah, they flash out, and then false ego shows up, and then it gets dark. Like that starts to happen. And the material ego springs up, and then it's endowed with these active power of three kinds. Huh? Good, passion, and ignorance. Serene, active, and dull. And then you get everything coming out. But the Chaturvyuha shows up, which is like that, yeah?
You talk about the devotees. Somebody asked me the other day how Parama, it's sort of like the time of the discussion about the general manifestation of the material world.
What?
There.
What? How what?
Talk about each individual soul is Parama, you know, where, you know, how it manifests, sure.
Yes, Vasudeva. Uh-huh.
So, Super Soul has Paramatma. Is it described exactly where it is?
Yeah, yeah. His whole description is in this third canto. What he looks like, what he wears.
What stage
it is. What it says also, you know, he doesn't just stand there too. He sits down, he laughs. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It says you can see him do this in your heart, you know. This big. Looks like this big. And he's seen. It's in the second canto. It's in the third canto. He's described.
The living entities are embodied. Paramatma is there. It's just like automatically.
Yeah, yeah. He's there. He expands into the material world and is in the heart of every living entity. And if the consciousness becomes pure, he's seen inside and out. And if the consciousness becomes even purer, you don't see even four-armed Vasudev. You see Dwarkadish. You see Krishna and Radharani. The Prabhupada has described that also. Yeah, Prabhupada says. Mm-hmm. You can't, you know. You know, if you just worship Lord Balaram, you're worshiping Shankarshan and so on. Well, he's a Shankarshan above those four, but in this case, they're all one, actually. No, Vishnu Tattva. They're not inconceivably and simultaneously one and different. They're just one. That's another amazing thing. Okay, any other questions about that? I didn't really want to get into this whole esoteric, you know, I just want to give a brief view of where the modes come from. Yeah. Well, it's mystic because it comes from Krishna. So you can't say it's material. But when it's acting on condition souls, then it's called material. Because what does it do? It keeps them locked into the material world, into the birth and death in the material world. As long as they're under the control of this energy, then they're not seeing Krishna. They're working under the false ego. And they're bound or conditioned in different ways. Oh, it's pretty visible. We'll discuss all its different manifestations so that you, as an expert diagnostician, can say, passion, oh, ignorance, ah, goodness. You see the causes, right? When you see hyperactivity. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you can't see any force unless, you know, how do you know a magnetic force is there until you start to see, you know, iron filings scoot across a piece of paper? Then you know the force is there. So the same way, the modes, you know, mode of goodness is there when somebody's happy, serenely happy. And when somebody's, you know, agitated and active, then you know the mode of passion is there. When somebody's dull and helpless, then you know the mode of ignorance is there. When somebody wants pickled pig feet to eat, you can say, ah, that's the mode of ignorance. You think anything worse? I bet you there are. That's getting down there, huh? You ever stand downwind when somebody opens one of the can of those things? It's quite an experience. Not as bad as cooking chitlins, though. You do it outdoors and upwind. You stand upwind. It's so disgusting. Go ahead.
I was going to ask, I guess this is maybe maybe a question that comes later on in the class. But I was going to ask, how much power does the living entity actually have in choosing the modes?
Choosing the modes.
In other words,
Prabhupada says you can choose. He does that. He says you can choose. You can cultivate a mode. He says we resolve, we can come to, elevated to the mode of goodness. The point is about understanding this thing, is that we have to choose to be elevated to goodness. This has sometime in the past been a controversial point, and maybe it'll become controversial again as we talk about Varnashram Dharma. Our goal in Krishna consciousness is to transcend the modes. That's why we want to understand them. What is the position from which we can transcend the mode? Supremacy among the modes. One who is actually intent on advancing in Krishna consciousness has to transcend these three modes. The prominence of some certain mode of nature is manifested in one's dealings, in his activities, in his eating, etc. That's what we're going to find out, all the, you know, clinical conditions of the modes of material nature, where you like to live, you know, and so on. All this will be explained in later chapters. But if one wants, he can develop, by practice, the mode of goodness. So you can at least choose the mode of goodness. And if you don't choose the mode of goodness, you're choosing passion or ignorance, really. So you choose. You can choose. If one wants, he can develop, by practice, the mode of goodness, and thus defeat the modes of ignorance and passion. One can similarly develop the mode of passion and defeat goodness and ignorance.
My question is, to make a conscious choice like that, don't you have to be in the mode of goodness,
Mr. Wadi? Wait a second. You just have to have good association.
Yeah.
Now, in order to have good association, you have to be in the mode of goodness? No. You just have to be brainwashed. Kidnapped. Psychologically imprisoned. No, you have... Although there are these three modes of material nature, if one is determined... but what about determination? If one is determined, he can be blessed by the mode of goodness. And by transcending the mode of goodness, he can be situated in pure goodness, which is called the Vasudeva state, a state in which one can understand the science of God. That's what Prabhupada says. Now, he says you can choose. So then the question is, well, to choose the mode of goodness, don't I have to be in the mode of goodness? No. Just a little bit. There's nobody. The modes are always together, right? So that's why they're always defeating one another. So if you're in the mode of goodness, there's going to be a little bit of passion, a little bit of ignorance mixed up together. If you're in the mode of passion, there's going to be a little bit of goodness and some ignorance. And if you're in the mode of ignorance, there may be a little passion and, you know, a little goodness somewhere. So, you know, the conditions are there for you to make the choice. But you make choices in different ways. For example, you know, I make a choice, I want to give up smoking cigarettes, say. Maybe I'm not able to do it, but if I somehow or other I meet a friend who's really determined and hangs around and takes them away and hides them and yells at me and shows me, you know, pictures of lungs and things like that, you know, then that can carry. And then all I got to do is just determine to stay in that association. I mean, how do people get off of alcohol by joining Alcoholics Anonymous? They go into these meetings, we have a similar arrangement for becoming, you know, modes anonymous. I mean. we do the same way. So even if you're weak, you can act very strongly if you stay in the, if you just have the determination to stay in the right association. Yeah. Yeah, for now,
So, it's a matter of association, say, who can one, in a place where there's so much passion and ignorance around, can one actually stay in the world, but you know, in a place that's so much passion?
It depends on you know, depends on his own nature. If somebody's fairly in the mode of goodness anyway, then it won't bother him so much. But if he has a real tendency to a passionate ignorance, then you can move to India, Gitanagari. You can sell your, we'll miss you, but, you know, maybe the best thing for you. That's what you're asking, right? Can you do it here? I mean, Gitanagari is pretty placid, but if it's still too heavy for you, you can go to India. But you have to be a poor man. Yeah.
There's an understanding that I've always had, you know, it's kind of exemplified by the verse in the second chapter of the first canto, God made about us. And then the term by devotional service,
mm-hmm.
these loads receive
loads
upon us.
That's right.
It seems that you know, there may be some decision we make, but it has to be coupled with, you know, with devotional service in order to actually achieve it.
Yeah, when Prabhupada says if one chooses he can be elevated to goodness, he means by choosing to perform devotional service. And then it says that the effect of devotional service, the effect of devotional service will first be seen by the disappearance of passion and ignorance. Prabhupada said, it should be seen, like you take your pulse. Lust and greed and anger should begin to disappear from the heart. Prabhupada said, if they don't, then you're doing something wrong. That means that when Prabhupada said, I have taken hippies and made them into happies, he was saying that I have taken people in the mode of passion and ignorance and brought them to the mode of goodness. The symptom of the mode of goodness is happiness. That's a serene happy, you know, that's just happy. It's not like you won the lottery happy, that's not happiness. But happy, that's, so it should be seen. So the effect of devotional service is that first of all, and it says that nasta prayeshu abhadreshu, that they become destroyed almost to nil, the inauspicious things in the heart. That means that one becomes situated initially in the mode of goodness. And that's what we should see the effect. And then from there, one can advance further to transcend the modes altogether. The mode of goodness has its temptations. And in fact, they can be more severe than those of passion and ignorance, because in the mode of goodness you feel, well, good. Yes. Yes, that's right. Yes, that's right. That's right. But, you know, the point about devotional service is you can begin it in any mode. And that's the notion, is if your work is the work of the mode of passion, or your work is the work of the mode of ignorance, you do that work but give up attachment to the results. And then gradually you'll come to the mode of goodness. But if you don't do that work, then you're really going to mess yourself up. So you have to do that work, but you give up the results. Don't give up the work. That's the only way you're going to get loose. Yeah.
one thing that often maybe is confusing, that Prabhupada defined motive goodness as maintaining and attaching, is creating or coming into being.
Mm-hmm.
So Prabhupada